Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. Fellow Democrats, Mr. Chairman of the meeting tonight, Mr. Chairman of the National Democratic Committee, I certainly appreciate that wonderful introduction. I enjoyed immensely the statements of the Vice President. I think he rather hit the nail on the head when he talked about the splits. This is a happy occasion for the Democratic Party. I know that all the gatherings of our party throughout the country are as cheerful as this one, and I give all of them greetings. I'm happy to be here talking to you once more from the same old stand. This is right where I expect it to be. I don't know whether you remember it or not, but I told you on the 19th of February last year you were looking at the next president, and you are. What I feel tonight is not personal pride or elation. It is a deep satisfaction that our party has served its country so well that the people have endorsed it for the fifth consecutive time. I'm aware that this was something of a surprise in certain quarters. I'm told that some people are even making elaborate plans with considerable relish to bury the Democratic Party and all it stands for. These people are like certain friends of Andrew Jackson, whose memory we are honoring tonight. Once upon a time, there were a number of citizens who thought that Andrew Jackson ought to have a suitable coffin. At great expense, they went to Syria and purchased a marble sarcophagus. A sarcophagus, as you know, is a tomb, a big marble coffin with a marble lid. These citizens then shipped this marble box to Washington, which is quite a job, for it weighed 4 or 5 tons. At last, they thought a suitable resting place had been provided for Andrew Jackson. Well, the only trouble with that project was that Andrew Jackson wasn't dead. Moreover, he wasn't ready to die, and he didn't intend to be hurried to his grave. Courteously but firmly, he wrote to these well-meaning citizens and said, "I must decline the intended honor." And they never did get old Hickory into that thing. You can still see it if you're interested, out in front of the Smithsonian Institution. It still sits there. And it wouldn't even be buried in it. I think that this little story has a moral in it, and it's this. Before you offer to bury a good Democrat, you better be sure he's dead. There's another lesson we can derive from the more recent past. You cannot bury the Democratic Party as long as it is working for the welfare and the advancement of the people of this nation. The central issue of the campaign last fall was the welfare of all the people against special privilege for the few. When we made it clear where the Democratic Party stood on that issue, the people made it clear where they stood with us. The Democratic Party has had a long and glorious history. Through its founders and leaders, whom we honor tonight, its roots go back to the American Revolution. But however ancient and glorious it may be, our party is not and never has been an end in itself. The only justification for the Democratic Party is its usefulness to the American people in achieving the government they desire. I'm proud and happy to say that never before has the Democratic Party been more firmly dedicated to a program in the interest of all the people. All the people. The platform adopted by the Democratic Convention of 1948 is clear and forthright. Our job now is to enact into law the programs that the people need and deserve. And that is exactly what we're doing. We are meeting determined opposition. The special interests are fighting us just as if they'd never heard of November the 2nd. For them, campaigns and elections are just preliminary exhibition matches. The fight in the Congress is the main issue with them. The special interests are on the job year in and year out, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. They work through their lobbies and pressure groups, through the editorial pages and columnists and commentators they control. They twist and misrepresent the measures the people voted for. They are again trying to frighten the people with the old, worn-out bugaboo that socialism is taking over in Washington. They've been saying that for 16 years, ever since I've been here. Not a word too thin, of course. This one-sided barrage of propaganda seems overwhelming at first. There are no full-page ads on our side. In fact, all we have on our side is the people. Thank God for that. But that's enough. Because the people are aroused. I did a lot of traveling around the country last fall. And I found that the people were vitally interested in what their government was doing. Make no mistake about it, there's never been a time when the people were so well informed about the Congress and the President and the records of their representatives and senators as they are now. This concern on the part of the people is a fine thing for the growth of democracy and responsible government. I propose to do all I can to help it along. In fact, I may even get on a train again and make another tour around the country. I get on that train, I'm going to tell the people how their government is getting along. And I know how to tell them. If we keep the people fully informed, I'm confident that they will support the Congress and the President in our fight against the special interests. It is important that the American people should be aware of the tactics that the special interests are using to obstruct our programs. Right now, the special interests are using every trick they can think of to defeat our labor policy. After the election, hardly anybody had a good word to say about the Taft-Hartley Act. But now, when I ask the Congress to repeal the Taft-Hartley Act, exactly as I said I would in the campaign, there are great outcries from the special interests. "He can't mean it," they say. "Repeal the Taft-Hartley Act? Repeal that beneficent, charitable, kindly statute? That charter of labor and the working man's friend? Why, it's unthinkable." And they keep this up night and day in an effort to convince the people that the Taft-Hartley Act is a good law. But it's no use. It isn't any use. All the oratory in the world won't change a bad law into a good law. When the Taft-Hartley Act was before the Congress, a Republican senator called it a device for making unions so weak they cannot carry on effective collective running around trying to keep it from being repealed right now. That was true then, and it's true now. The Taft-Hartley Act is an insult to the working man and women of this country. And they won't rest until it's repealed and destroyed. After the election, I thought we would have the cooperation of our Republican friends in this effort. I felt sure that the Republican Party would be anxious to throw the Taft-Hartley Act overboard faster than the sailors got rid of Jonah. I'm beginning to think maybe I was wrong about that. But no matter what the Republicans do, the course that our party should follow is abundantly clear. The Democratic Party in its platform is solemnly committed to work for the repeal of the Taft-Hartley Act. We are working for its repeal. And with the support of fair-minded Americans, regardless of party, we will continue to work for its repeal until it is placed upon the statute books with a labor law that is fair and decent. Same die-hard reactionaries who want to cripple the labor unions have also started a campaign of confusion against all other measures for the welfare of the people. They say they are for extending and improving Social Security. But they call our proposals a bureaucratic system that will destroy the character of every American. They claim to be in favor of housing, but they say our low-rent housing program is a mistake because it does too much for the low-income families. Can you beat that? They make speeches about the American home, but they encourage landlords to lock out their tenants until rent control is repealed. They say they're in favor of good wages, but they argue that the minimum wage should be held down to a starvation level. They're making exactly the same speeches now against the 75-cent minimum wage that they made back in the 30s, against the 40-cent minimum wage. Not a bit of difference. They claim to be in favor of developing our great river basins, but they raise the old cry of superstate against every practical step we propose. We will not be deceived by their propaganda. Despite their efforts to confuse, we will enact the programs to which we are committed. We can and we will provide a better life for all our people. The heart of our program lies our determination to preserve the health of our economy. We know that the welfare of the whole nation depends upon keeping our economy well balanced. Seeing to it that each group gets its fair share of the goods we produce. The special interests have attacked every governmental measure we have devised to keep our economy on an even keel. As an example, last year, some selfish groups tried to destroy our farm price support program. It's a good thing for the country that they failed in that. These farm price supports are actually supports of our entire economy.